A good telltale sign is to look at the mental preparation strategies, the psyching up strategies that your athlete is incorporating. If they tend to be somebody who gets nerves and that psyching up strategy doesn't appear to be helping, because a lot of time in strength sports, psyching up is predominantly considered as getting yourself irate, increasing them arousal levels, getting angry, screaming. If this individual just doesn't seem to be benefiting from that, if they seem to be uncomfortable, if their performance seems to drop, then that's when you need to start thinking about how can I control this, because they are exhibiting symptoms of something that is detrimental to performance. And that's when you'd incorporate the techniques identified within strategy 1 to strategy 3.
Hi, Curtis. It's my pleasure to have you on Evidence Strong Show. If you could briefly introduce yourself.
My name's Curtis Cusimano. I am a PhD student in sport and exercise science at the University of Essex. I come from a broad background of strength sport practitioner work, working as a strongman coach within the community, in addition to utilizing my sports psychology understanding to apply interventions for working athletes.
Amazing. So I invited you because you published very interesting papers about psyching up. So in strength sports, you know, anything in strength sports is so rare that I'm super excited to have you. Thank you for saying yes. And the first question would be, what is psyching up? Do you have some kind of definition for us?
Yeah, so psyching up conventionally over the past 30 years or so of research has been defined as form of psychological strategy used immediately prior or during the execution of skill. However, that didn't seem to, because it was specifying as well that it was self-directed, it didn't seem to consider different methodologies and interventions that are quite often seen within the strength community. This can be demonstrated by anecdotal or just watching, you know, strongman on TV, powerlifting meets, and observational research conducted by Winwood. So very recently, it's not actually been published yet. It got accepted in November. We've altered that definition to being any mental preparation strategy that aims to alter the levels of activation. This can be either enhancing state arousal or trying to control or decrease state arousal.
Nice. All right, so let's go into the meat. What are these? Do we have any groups or is there some kind of classification?
Yes. So again, we used a concept mapping approach, which effectively to do this, we approached strength athletes and coaches, and we got them to first say, what sort of techniques do you use to get yourself psyched up? This ended up giving us, I think it was 901 off the top of my head, different methods to get psyched up. I then had to condense this list and get it back out to strength athletes and ask them to then group these strategies together in addition to giving their perceived ratings. From this, we ended up with 8 different psyching up strategies overall. So the first one is pre-performance routines, goals, performance accomplishments. So thinking about where you aim to be or where you've been in the past. Positive thoughts, feelings, and images. So thinking about previous times you've done really well, things like that. Self-deprecation. So this is now going towards aiming to increase arousal stage. Physical and physiological techniques, negative thoughts, feelings, and images, stimulation, and aggressive acts. So these can comprise of a variety of different techniques. For example, within the aggressive acts, there's headbutting walls and getting slapped and screamed at. Conversely, when we look towards the first 3 strategies identified, we've got things like visualizing yourself performing the exercise or the lift successfully. So the initial concept mapping is kind of like a 2-stage area of data collection. Initially, we brought in the various different techniques that athletes use to get themselves psyched up. Following this, there was like a sifting phase where I condensed a list of 900 into 65 different techniques. Once we then had this list, we sent it back out to a sample of strongmen, powerlifters, Olympic weightlifters, for them to then, first of all, group the techniques within what they perceive to be appropriate groups. And then they rated each individual technique, because obviously there will be variations in who groups what where. From this, we then used the SORT information. We conducted a multidimensional scaling, applied a point to each technique within a map while conducting cluster analysis to allow for separations of the groups or of the techniques to create individual psyching up strategies or groups. Obviously, things like this will never be completely perfect. There will be individuals who utilize a technique from strategy 3 to and a technique from strategy 8. It's always going to be some inconsistencies in some regard with that sort of methodology, but the stress values were indicating good good separation of groups was really impressive, really high for a study of this sort, indicating that while obviously there will always be some variations within athletes and the way they psych up, that the strategy or the classification of the groups is fairly significant, and is separation of the separate strategies is fairly conclusive in these regards. And while you could say that, well, person A may use technique 40 that is in strategy 1 and technique 3 that's in strategy 8, this could be found within any sort of psychological skill work anyway, i.e. previously they used to just separate into attentional focus, self-talk, imagery and preparatory arousal. You could utilize self-talk methods in order to enhance state arousal. You could use imagery techniques to do the same, or you could use self-talk to increase attentional focus. So there is always some potential there for overlap, but the stress value was real high, which indicates reliable separation of said strategies.
All right, so we have a new classification that groups techniques into these groups. You said 8?
Yes, 8 separate strategies, yeah.
Awesome. Now you tested these in athletes.
Yes, so the control condition, we opted for a passive control. This was based off systematic review we did where participants who were incorporated within a passive condition, there was less positive effects of said intervention they were comparing to, which leads to a possibility, especially again when you're measuring psychological interventions and strategies, if you were to engage in an active control in order to control for the use of psyching up strategies, this could end up having a detrimental effect on the performance within a control condition. In addition to that, especially if you're getting them to do a strength task, there's potential health and safety risks that you need to be considering as well, should you be engaging in a distraction technique or a distraction technique of the sorts. So we opted for a passive control condition, which was fairly simplistic. We asked the participant not to engage in the psyching up strategy they typically use, and to, while they're still trying to generate as much force into the deadlift as possible, we want them to treat it as a blasé approach, like they're picking up their gym bag or something like that. In addition to that, we had to have silence in the room, so we had to keep turning music on and off in gyms around the country, in addition to instructing everyone else who may be around that keep stum. This needs to be perfectly controlled. Conversely, the other condition, your psyching up strategy, if you need anything from us, let us know, we'll do it. If you need anything from peers, other people around the facility, take it. You have preference over music, should you want that. So that got quite fun as well, getting to see various different psyching up strategies, getting involved in it, giving a few people a backslap here and there. It was it was weird to call it science in some regards, but we found that there was a big difference within the effects of psyching up on performance, but there was no indication of a superior strategy. I think one of the key elements of this is, as we did see that there was a trend in the more experienced the athlete was, the greater the enhancement in performance. I think it ranged from, I'm going off the top of my head here, so I might be wrong, but I think it was an average of 14% increase in regional level athletes, and then 22% in national and 24% in international athletes.
Wow.
I might be butchering the numbers slightly there, as it is off the top of my head, but there was a trend, especially a big difference between the regional and the national and the international. So having that experience and practice with your skill and building that trust within it. But I also do think that, especially if you're dealing with experienced athletes, they've got that experience of effectively trial and error. They might have tried the getting angry in the salts, figured out it didn't work for them, and gone for something to decrease that activation.
So interesting. That's fascinating that the more experienced athletes were way better.
Yeah. So there was, as you can imagine, disparities between the sample sizes, but not enough for it to make any meaningful difference when it comes to statistical significance. So again, off the top of my head, roughly it was split with around 100 regional athletes and then a fairly even split between the national and international athletes, with circa about 50 per group there. It wasn't quite that clean cut nice numbers, but within that sort of ballpark.
Sounds good. Would you be able to say what would work for what type of athlete?
Yeah, so within the discriminant analysis, we indicated what personality traits were greatest associated with strategy selection. So there was no effect on performance, results, but the especially when you were looking at the results, it was clear that there was a trend in what strategies are preferred by people of certain types of traits. So when it comes to the individual strategy, there is no indication as to you have to select this specific one. I think allowing an athlete to have some sort of autonomy of what seems to be most comfortable for them and allow their preference may be what indicates this to some degree. But individuals who have greater sensitivity to reward and lower sensitivity to anxiety and higher trait aggression will favour strategy 4, 5, 6, 7 and 8. Those that appear to be aiming to increase state arousal in some degree. So obviously it's just differences of how you get there. So for self-deprecation, you're getting there in a way where you're saying some pretty intense things about yourself and to yourself, whereas aggressive acts is more over engaging in more physical activities that may again raise that arousal, getting slapped, things like stimulation as well, utilizing pre-workouts, inhaling ammonia, things like that. Whereas if somebody has greater sensitivity to their anxiety systems, lower trait aggression and lower reward sensitivity, they'll favor the first three strategies. So pre-performance routines, positive thoughts, feelings and images, goals, performance, accomplishments. So again, we can't specify any deeper than that in a regard to if you're X, Y, and Z, you should be in this strategy only. But I don't necessarily think that would be an appropriate response anyway. People will always have their own preferences, and allowing that autonomy of saying, okay, you should pick it from one of these three strategies, or you should pick from one of these five strategies, just allows them to relate to what, whether it's their own personal experiences, what they feel comfortable doing. And like I said before, there is always going to be some potential crossover within there. So it might be that they take inspiration from techniques within a couple of the strategies rather than just always soaring in on one individual.
Could you explain routine in particular?
Yeah, so pre-performance routines itself. So this is, you are quite right, the verbiage, the terminology can kind of indicate, well, in some regard, every psyching up strategy is some form of routine, right? But it's more based off the methodologies used within this specific strategy matches those that are used within current literature regarding what is meant by a pre-performance routine within sports psych literature. So this can be, you know, to read off a few of the techniques as giving yourself a countdown in your head prior to execution. So before you pull a deadlift, you go 3, 2, 1, go. Engaging in slow, deep breaths, clearing your mind, visualizing performing the lift successfully, wearing the same clothing or footwear that you tend to use in previous successful attempts. These ingrained actions or behaviors or thought processes are seen, and it's really cool as well in a sense of seeing that these are the strategies used by strength athletes that they've just picked up through. Maybe they've been advised to do it, maybe they've just figured it out on their own. But these are things that have been found in various other sports as techniques to especially control for things like anxiety. The idea effectively is to try and increase flow state by decreasing activity within the frontal regions of the brain and relying more on trying to elicit a flow response in some regard, which has been shown as really effective in controlling for symptoms of anxiety. For example, things like the countdown, the breathing techniques and visualization is heavily incorporated in golfers, for example, as an intervention when they're struggling with anxiety, when they're going for a putt or something. So pre-performance routines, while the verbiage does kind of indicate, especially with a psyching up strategy, all of them are a routine in some regard, this was more just because it reflected previous literature of the same name.
All right. Could we stop for a moment also to discuss what is the ideal situation? So is there a state the athlete has to be in to perform at their best? Because obviously they could get there better if they were allowed to use their preferred techniques to get themselves. So there is, I presume, some kind of state that will promote better performance. So what it is?
Yeah, so this is a really complex issue that sports psych has been trying to address literally since 1908 in some regard. And it is entirely individual. So, and this is one of the reasons that I included specifically anxiety sensitivity within conditions for most recent trials, because 1908, Yerkes Dodson published about the relationship between arousal and performance, indicating that there's an optimal point within the middle of an inverted U-shaped relationship. And there's been various different theories specifically looking into the impact and the relationship between performance performance, anxiety, and arousal. And typically, it's once you exceed this threshold, you end up with decreased performance and end up in a state of state anxiety rather than optimal performance, feeling excited, feeling hyped, feeling psyched. Conversely, if you fail to meet that threshold, it will be a bit of a boredom, lack of interest, not full engagement. There's been various adaptions of this theory or different theories to look into this relationship since. So there's catastrophe theory, reversal theory, but I tend to buy most into the individual zones of optimal performance, which basically indicates the same inverted U-shape, but that optimal threshold is at different points for different people. So myself, for example, may perform at a much greater level when then that arousal level is extremely high. I may have, in this scenario, low sensitivity to anxiety and really strive upon that physiological response of increased state arousal. Conversely, you may be of greater anxiety sensitivity and your threshold might be on the other end of the spectrum where you need to be in a lower state of arousal, because if you exceed that point, you'll end up with performance anxiety, which debilitates performance. So with that in mind, and this is why we changed the psyching up definition to alters activation levels and utilizing mental preparation skills to alter activation levels, because while the first three strategies appear to be either trying to decrease or control that state arousal, the other five appear to be trying to elicit and enhance that state arousal in what appears to be ever-growing methodologies. So, or difference. So some are very internal, such as saying nasty things about yourself in your head versus going around grunting, screaming and headbutting walls. So there isn't an optimal state per se, but each individual has their own optimal state, if that makes sense.
Is there anything coaches can do to help the athlete?
Yeah, so first of all, it's kind of knowing who your person is. At this point in time, at least prior to publication, it is just trying to understand your athlete in some regards of, okay, they appear to exhibit symptoms of getting nerves or anxiety. It may be that we are intending on controlling and decreasing this. Conversely, if you know somebody can elicit a more beneficial response from increasing them arousals, they don't seem to exhibit these anxiety responses. They seem to do better when people are shouting at them around them. That's when you can tend to favor the latter strategies. Once this manuscript I've currently got in draft gets published, I have made a lot of grand promises to those in the strength sport communities that the specific function that we now have, so we've got a formula that will indicate, based off the same questionnaires we utilized within that study, that this will be an accessible formula in a sense of it'll be online and it'll be published in a way that you effectively just fill out the questionnaires and then it will tell you should pick from one of these three strategies. Here are the techniques used.
Do you think that the scale you're working on will be applicable for Olympic weightlifters too? Because you mentioned that at the beginning you used Olympic weightlifters for the mapping study, but then later you used mainly strongmen and powerlifting athletes. Do you think that we can put all these sports together? Because powerlifting and weightlifting are similar in the sense that you go up to your lift, you take one lift, you go off, then you do it again. So would it be the same or close, or how do you see that?
So the strategies themselves were also identified within the concept mapping of Olympic weightlifters. So I do believe in some regard it may be able to be carried over. Obviously, the main differences between the sports of strongman, powerlifting and Olympic weightlifting, specific when it comes to one rep max attempts, is the actual type of strength exhibition. So with Olympic weightlifting, it's power-based strength speed movements, whereas within powerlifting, it is absolute strength. And then in strongman, obviously, there's greater variation. The main reason I didn't include Olympic weightlifters within this study is that it wouldn't allow for the utilization of a consistent dependent variable, in a sense of with powerlifter strongman, maximal deadlifts is something they're both exposed to on a regular basis.
If you could bring it all together and have some kind of advice for coaches. So you know quite a lot on the basis of the studies that you already know results of. So how coaches should apply what you just discovered or brought together in their coaching practice?
Yeah, so in order to really make the most of what we've got so far, is the questionnaires that we used within the trials were the Buss-Perry aggression questionnaire, BPAQ, and the BIS-BAS scale, which is behavioral inhibition sensitivity and behavioral activation sensitivity from Carver and White. Both these questionnaires are available for free at various different websites. Psych Tools is one of them. From these results, especially if you're thinking about how to prescribe or what type of strategy to prescribe for your athlete, should the individual display greater sensitivities to their reward system, which is the BAS in the BIS-BAS scale, or if they display, and if they display lower scores for the BIS, which is the anxiety sensitivity, and higher scores for the trait aggression. And these are overall scores, especially for the BAS, which it does have subcategories, same for the BPAT, then I would opt for strategy 4, 5, 6, 7, or 8. So the last five strategies on the list within the concept mapping study. If they exhibit especially higher scores of anxiety, so higher BIS score, or lower sensitivity to the reward and lower scores for the trait aggression, then higher scores on the BIS indicating greater anxiety sensitivity, then I'd opt for one of the first three strategies. A good telltale sign is to look at the mental preparation strategies, the psyching up strategies that your athlete is incorporating. If they tend to be somebody who gets nerves and that psyching up strategy doesn't appear to be helping, because a lot of time in strength sports, psyching up is predominantly considered as getting yourself irate, increasing them arousal levels, getting angry, screaming. If this individual just doesn't seem to be benefiting from that, if they seem to be uncomfortable, if their performance seems to drop, then that's when you need to start thinking about how can I control this, because they are exhibiting symptoms of something that is detrimental to performance. And that's when you'd incorporate the techniques identified within strategy 1 to strategy 3. I personally, in that regard, based on my own preference and experiences, think that opting for the pre-performance routines approach would probably still be favourable, just because it's supported findings within other literature as well. That ability to be able to switch off that perception of this is a state of potential anxiety, using different methodologies to increase that flow. But, you know, if somebody feels more comfortable or enjoys the idea of thinking about positive previous experiences, whether it be within the sporting context or outside of it, allowing autonomy as well for them to select, okay, you need to decrease your anxiety levels, here are three different strategies. You know, providing athletes with autonomy has been shown to be extremely beneficial, not just in a performance context, but in a client-coach relationship as well.
Awesome, sounds good. Okay, two short questions to finish. The first one is, what is your favorite lift?
What's my favorite lift? Oh, I mean, the deadlift is the mother of all lifts, but I feel that's a bit cliche. I did used to really love Farmer's Walk, but a colleague of mine recently beat me on that event in a comp, and that's increased the negative effect towards that one, as that was one I should have beaten him out in that comp. But I quite like a super yoke as well, quite good with a yoke.
Awesome. And where people can find you, either they want to follow your work or see what you're publishing, what you're up to, or even ask a question, where should they go?
So there's a few options really. If you're not overly into reading publications and you want easy or more accessible explanations of my findings, I like to discuss a lot of my work on my Instagram page, or in addition to generic psychological research that can enhance performance specific to strength athletes. So that is my Instagram handle, is the Strongman Psychologist. Conversely, if you're more interested in reading publications and actual papers, I can be found on ResearchGate, Curtis Cusimano, and Google Scholar. Same name.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Curtis.
Thank you very much for your time. Thank you very much.
Thank you.